you'll tell me. But I think, you know, this was really, we, Victoria and Lisa and I followed up about a few of the questions we had from our last call. A lot of those questions were specific to the claims conference, so we followed up with them. We've got some answers on those questions. And then, right, Victoria, we were just going to kind of leave it open for people to bring challenges, questions, opportunities. And a couple of people emailed those in too. So I know we were all on those emails about two agencies had emailed in about memorializing survivors who have passed.
And I just want to add that this is such a good forum for everybody because we're all sharing such a vast amount of knowledge. And I think we're able to streamline, since Claims Conference is on a call with us, some things like when we were talking about utilizing various transportation. So we were able to directly go to Claims Conference to try to figure out and to streamline the process to make sure that we're all working within our scopes, that there is no issues. And I think, like, for me, that was probably like one of the biggest takeaways from the group, is that like we have just such an enormous amount of understanding and knowledge between all of us.
Maybe we'll start there, Victoria. We'll start with the transportation question. So one of the questions, and everyone just feel free to chime in as is meaningful for you. One of the questions on the last call, and we didn't have the claims conference on that call, so we could kind of speak in a little more open way about the things maybe that were challenging for us. One of the questions was about Uber and Lyft, utilizing those as transportation options. So Julie got back to us, Julie Chapnick from the claims conference, and said that she was talking with the audit team. If we have the list of agencies who are interested in getting more information, we can set up a follow-up call so that we can walk through that process and make sure that no one stumbles during their audit. No one has information that they, you know, wish that they had known, so that we can just all be clear on what and how we would utilize Uber and Lyft and build a claims conference. So if you want to use your little chat, your chat box on the right, it's on the right on mine, maybe it's not on the right on yours, but if you want to use your chat box to let us know if that's something that you would be interested in getting more information on, we can help facilitate setting that call up. So that's about using Uber and Lyft and billing claims conference for that, utilizing our claims conference funds for that. Victoria, should I keep going through our updates?
Yes.
Okay. So one of the other questions, and a bunch of agencies brought this up, it was a great question. There was, I hope I'm correct. So there was a question about widow's pension, but was it, it was about a specific fund.
Article two,
widow's pension. So we have information, but that we understand starting in 2020, surviving spouses can apply for this widow's pension no matter when the partner passed away, as long as that surviving spouse is alive to apply for that widow's pension. So Article 2 widow's pension, as of January 2020, surviving spouses will be able to apply for that. No heirs or children will be eligible for that, but surviving spouses will. There's going to be information on the claims conference website in the coming weeks, and they are going to blast a message out to agencies. We could also put that on our network site, our affinity group site, if we want, so that it's in multiple places in case you look at one place more than the other. So that's Article 2 widow's pension, another update from our previous call. Another goal was to sort of, you know, our agencies, like Victoria said, there's so much knowledge here. We wanted to be able to connect agencies that might have similar challenges, populations, situations. So one of the things that the claims conference did for us, which was super helpful, is they connected Jewish Family Services in LA and New York so that they could kind of talk about wait lists, how they're navigating that. Victoria, you probably know more since you are JFS LA.
Yes, it was really wonderful because Julie Chapnick was able to get us contacts and sort of the information that I was able to derive was really wonderful and will be implemented. And so I really ask all of you to, you know, bring up if there are things that you want to talk about and to see if we ourselves can connect connect amongst the people that are here already.
Great. And then the last update, and then we're going to open this up because we don't want to talk at you the whole time. The last update is for small agencies like Kansas City, St. Louis, my friends in St. Louis, my friends in Louisville, my friends in Indianapolis, my friends in Raleigh, Durham, Charlotte. If you are a small agency that doesn't get claims conference funds, we now have an email address, and we'll post that. That's another good reminder to us. We can post that on our affinity group site so that we all have access to it. But we now have a claims conference email address where we can ask questions. Because a lot of us have really, we've seen like very, only front stage. We haven't seen any of the backstage stuff. So like how does the eligibility work? Where do the funds come from? So we now have a direct claims conference email address where we can ask those questions. So that was another really good follow-up step that we had resolved.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, for sure. Anyone, Victoria, any other updates? Lisa, any other updates?
I don't have any other updates.
Same.
Okay. So now we're going to open it up to questions, concerns, anything from our previous calls, any suggestions for future calls. This is really our time to talk openly and kind of figure out where we're headed.
And if you can't speak for some reason, like Gail, you can always write in the chat box and we will respond to you. And for those of you who I didn't get to write where you're from, you can do it yourself by just right click on your box, and then you see something that comes up that says rename, and then rename yourself. Like I'm gonna do it right now. I'm gonna rename myself Lisa, NJHSA, just so we know where you're from. So we get to know you over the course of this time.
And Carly Bruski, my friend in Philly, are you note-taking? You capable note-taker of ours?
I can, yes, absolutely.
Only if it's easy. Is it feasible for you? If not, I can also note-take.
Nope, I'm good. I'm opening up a Word document right now. We're good.
And we're recording this, so it is going to be up in the Affinity Group resource file as well.
Perfect.
We're saving each call until the next call, so if you know, you miss it or have to leave or are interested in the topic and couldn't make it, you can always listen to it at your leisure. So here we are. We have 28 people on this call and maybe more because there are people sitting in offices. What do you have to tell us? What kind of struggles are you having? What kind of successes are happening?
I see that Gail has asked about case management budget. Are there any efforts to the claims conference or Germany to increase the case management budget?
Is anyone here doing anything?
Do we have a claims conference representative on the call?
She left. I asked her to come back. Lori was on it. She thought that she was going to inhibit conversation, and I wrote her back and I said, no, come back on. But
Lori, we had a question. We're gonna put you on the spot. Any ideas on monies?
She left.
Hi everyone.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
770. Go ahead.
This is Annette Granith, Atlanta. Hi everyone. I just wanted to make sure, and I joined about 5 minutes late, so I may have missed this, and I apologize if I'm repeating myself. That everyone is aware of the National Home Sale in services that are provided through the claims conference.
Anna, did you ask if we're aware of the national home care resources provided through the claims conference?
Yes.
Can you tell us more about what that means?
Okay. This is mostly for state, and I don't know who exactly, I'm sorry, I'm just logging on remotely, who's sitting on that call. It's for states who do not receive funding from the claims conference?
Yes. Sorry, Anat. Yes, yes. Small cities. We gave a shout out, like Kansas City. Yes, we're aware.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so everyone's aware of that and that the five regions to connect with regions that can provide home care services. Just want to make sure everybody's aware of that.
Anat, that's a really good reminder. I'm going to make sure that we post, I'm going to send that, Lisa, to Megan Minnelli. We'll make sure we post that map in our resource portal on the NJHSA website so that everyone has access to it. It's a great reminder.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Hi, this is Rebecca. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Rebecca. No. Let Rebecca go first, and then 727, whoever that is, and you'll let us know.
It's Cindy Minetti.
Hi, Cindy.
I'm using my phone today.
Okay. Okay, Rebecca, you talk first.
Yeah. No. So, like, one of the concerns that our agency has, and we don't get claims conference funding at the Fairfield County JFS, but we work really closely with Rachel in New Haven, who's on the call, and that's worked brilliantly. But one of the problems we have is that for the JFNA grant that we have, we're really concerned about making our match. And so I reached out to JFNA about, you know, do they have any suggestions about fundraising? And I looked also at your resource about fundraising on your website. And I'm just curious, like, are there any other ideas that people have out there that I'm not thinking of? Or I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's not that it's my sole responsibility at the agency, but I would hate to see our program go away because I can't raise this match, you know, or we can't, we, the collective agency. And like, what have other smaller agencies done?
What have other smaller agencies done to raise money? That's a good question. Callie,
I can jump in. This is Cindy. Okay. We've done a lot. We use a lot of in-kind. We use volunteer time. We get people to give us like free services, and we count that. I mean, we count anything in kind we can, so we don't have to use so much cash. I don't know if that helps, but I mean, we're very big at finding in kind.
But how does that cover?
Go on, Rebecca.
No,
I'm saying that is very helpful, and I agree with you. Like, volunteers are definitely a lifeline. But what about, like, and I know that there's going to be more discussion about transportation, but there's just a bottom line of like, at some point, I don't know, I have to pay for people to get around or get to the programs, and I'm just so worried.
Use your volunteers to drive them if you can. I mean, we do, and that counts as volunteer time. And we use things, well, we had some senior transportation grants outside, so we use that for the transportation, and then that counts as match. You know, we just try to find anything that we don't have to outlay cash for, and we count it. So, like, we had a LCSW that gave us, like, a comp rate, so we took her rate, and that was match. What her normal rate was. We had a musician come and do a concert, and we said, what would you normally charge for a concert, you know, for, you know, 2 hours or whatever, and give us a letter, and that was match. I mean,
that's actually brilliant. I never thought about that. I did have a performer who did it for, I never thought about that. That's brilliant. Thank you.
I mean, if somebody a caterer donates food or provides extra servers and not charge you for that, ask them to give you a letter as to what they would normally charge for that. That would be match. So we're very creative. Legitimately, legally, but.
That's brilliant. Thank you.
And Rebecca, if you need, I'm sure JFS in Kansas City is not the only one, but if you need any waivers, like passenger liability waivers for volunteer transportation, just let me know in the comments section. I can email them straight to you. And you can just change the name at the top.
Well, but let's put that in the portal, in the resource library.
Yeah, put that in that'd be amazing. Put that in the portal. I think that'll really make a lot of people feel more prone to.
It covers you.
The driving.
And it covers you guys too, right? It covers the volunteers. It covers you. The attorneys have looked at it. You don't have to do anything new.
That's great.
Definitely. nobody wants the liability. So a lot of people don't want to do any driving for us specifically.
Yeah. Rachel, did you have something you wanted to say from New Haven?
No, at this point, I'm good. Thank you.
So I wanted to, this is Cindy again, I wanted to jump in on the case management question. So the claims conference has frozen our case management now. I think this is the third year that they've frozen our case management and our other personnel number. And, you know, and then on top of it, Madeline Tress, our program officer, just retired. So we're breaking in somebody new. But
I like how you said that you're breaking them in.
Yeah. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
So, and I went back to him and I said, you gave us this huge increase in home care, but it takes us a lot more effort to manage that process on our end. In terms of allocating the hours out to people, getting medical forms, getting, reassessments done, more frequently, because even though it's not required, they may need more hours. And so they came back to me with a whole lot of questions yesterday about how do I, justify what our case managers are doing and what their caseload, because we don't charge case management by the hour. My case managers are 100% in the program. So it's whatever they're doing is case management time. So, so I have to go back and actually do that analysis, which is going to be interesting. But, I don't know if anybody else has any ideas. I am open because it's not covering our costs. We've asked for more money and they said, we gave you more admin. Like, yeah, you still don't give us enough admin. So that's not helpful. Anyway, that's my two cents.
Can I ask a question? What do you put into admin? Are you putting any of the case management that isn't covered under admin?
No, because we're getting like around 8% for admin, mm-hmm. and our federally approved indirect rate is 14%. So I'm not even covering our agency charge back to the program based on our cost. There's just a whole lot of things that aren't covered anyway. So to now start having case management time, I'm not covering that either. And I don't want to have the agency come back and tell me that I have to cut staff because we can't afford it.
Cindy,
yeah.
Jenny asked.
It's definitely a problem in San Diego too. I mean, there's no question that we don't get covered at all, and our staff time is so limited, and it is so difficult. There's so much that's not covered.
Hold on for a second. Who's this talking from San Diego?
Hetty Dallin.
The same awful.
It just doesn't cover. It just doesn't cover it. I mean, there's no question the overhead isn't sufficient and the staff time is so not sufficient. I mean, it's not possible.
The Ladders for Leaders program offers high school and college students.
Someone has to mute themselves, I think.
With the opportunity.
Here we go. I got them. So, Hetty, wait a minute. You don't have to mute yourself. Whoever 718 is, I'm not sure who that is, but I muted you guys. So what do you do about it? Hetty, are you there?
I muted myself. Okay. Yeah. We just have to raise funds from the community, and staff are very pressured. It's just really a struggle. And I, just try to do as much as we can. Staff do the best they can, but it's really the type of time we want to give the survivors is not what we want to do. And JFS subsidizes significantly. But it's still, staff are highly pressured. And, as I said, they just don't understand how much time it takes. And I think it's not necessarily a claims conference. It's Germany where they do the negotiations. And I try to cut the claims conference some slack, knowing that they are negotiating and they just aren't getting anywhere because Germany doesn't see this as a concern.
Wow.
Excuse me, can you hear me? It's Gail from
yes.
Cherry Hill. And I posed that question because we've been flat, as Cindy has, for a number of years, though our grant has grown exponentially. You know, we don't have any more staff. We are, certainly they did raise our administrative rate, maybe for me as a director, maybe other directors, maybe some of the dollars the agency will be able to use towards, you know, case management, administering the case management piece. But I think, you know, I'm not sure. Do we know that the claims conference really does understand the urgency and what case management do that? Because case management is a very challenging thing.
Oh, shoot. Sorry.
Somebody. Okay.
I just muted you. I thought that was.
You did.
I'm sorry. Keep on going.
I'm okay.
Case management.
Because
very
I think
challenging
I just.
Thing.
Okay, it's challenging, but it's also challenging to relay to someone what that entails. Do the negotiators at the claims conference truly, you know, understand what it is we are doing? Because case management doesn't mean anything to somebody who's not a social worker, who isn't, you know, on the front line. So do we know, in fact, that the claims conference understands day-to-day what we are doing now as our survivors' needs are growing because they're becoming so frail? The people who would order their own kosher meals on wheels and would take care of their scheduling their own appointments, they need our case managers to do that for them. So I'm just wondering what we can do, how we can ensure that the claims conference has the right verbiage or the right narrative to negotiate on our behalf. Because unless they're case managers themselves, I'm not quite sure that they could represent what we're doing or the urgency.
And I'm going to jump back in too, because mm-hmm. one of the things that I think in the past, like we get an extra case manager from another JFS because our catchment area covers more than one mm-hmm. area. And they don't charge us for that. They use Federation funding. And we haven't really told, I mean, the claims conference knows about it, but we don't put that in our billings because, mm-hmm. you know, we cover our match and our agency contribution
right.
in other ways. And so, you know, so we're even low, you know, we even have more staff than they even know about or pay
right.
for.
Right.
And I feel like in a way we've hurt ourselves by not telling them those things because right. then it looks like we're, you know, operating just fine when I actually mm-hmm. have three case managers, not two.
Right.
Right.
Right. So that's doing a disservice to everyone else and to yourself by not really expressing what your needs are, because then you're not getting the funding because they think you're doing it for a lot less money.
And maybe that's
right.
something you put in, you know, in the next, well, it will be the next report, but whenever quarterly report, any changes, you could always write there's a threat that, you know, funds that you receive to help support the case management staff, that you're not going to have that you rely on X number of hours of a case manager that is covered by other funding. And I think introduce that idea, that's a way to introduce that idea to, you know, your pro, so that you're informing them. I don't know.
Right, our program manager officer knew that, but we never mm-hmm. put the dollars associated with it. And,
right.
you know, because, you know, our feeling is we don't necessarily need to tell Germany things that.
Right.
Because
right.
then they come back and they say, well, you got this other money. What do you need our money for?
I know. It's hard to know. It's hard to know.
It's definitely a catch. This Hetty Dallin again, a catch 22. And I know when I used to complain a lot, I was labeled a kvetch, and I had to be more appreciative. And so I have learned that that's what the role I need to be. I've been doing this for quite a few years.
Mm-hmm. So I'm listening to what people are saying. Someone's phone is beeping, but I don't know whose it is. But I'm wondering if there's a way.
Are you even here? You're here next week?
I don't know who's talking. I don't want to mute everyone, but it's hard to tell who's speaking. Anyway, I wanted to say that maybe we should get together a group of people to talk to the claims conference about exactly this issue that Gail brought up, to have like four members of this group have
so maybe you can mute everybody for now, and if someone wants to speak, but
everyone has to mute themselves if they want, and then unmute themselves. If I mute them, I have to
unmute
someone's
them. Phone is beeping. I can't speak for the claims conference, and as you know, I've retired from Elpa Jewish Family and Children's Service, but I still am in touch with the claims conference because I'm working on a different project locally with a healthcare system, the Morse Life healthcare system. My understanding, and I would just say that it's something to be kind of cautious about, and the last comment about having a spokesperson to really talk from this affinity group to talk with the claims conference may be a great idea, because it was my understanding from 3 years ago, Germany was responsible for actually freezing the case management role. And there had been some talk, and again, I'm not talking on behalf of the claims conference, but there had been some discussion about the claim, about Germany wanting to make allocations directly to Holocaust survivors. And there was some discussion about, well, if they did that, we as case managers would still be brought in, because survivors would still need us, even if they were making us, the dollars were going straight to Holocaust survivors. So it is 3 years later, there may be able to be some strategic and collaborative sort of discussion as a spokesperson talking with the claims conference to really figure out how to present this issue, revisit this issue with Germany, as Gail was saying from Cherry Hill. But I would be really kind of concerned about everybody starting to sort of, and I'm going to use, I think it was Hedy who used the word kvetch. If all the agencies started kvetching at the same time, I don't think that it would be as impactful as having a concerted kind of streamlined discussion about what the agencies are feeling. That's just my impression.
Hi, this is Erica Kapiloff. Can I say something?
Absolutely.
Hi, I'm in Hartford, and we are one of the agencies that are on this called Cash for Services pilot program, where exactly what you were talking about. We have survivors who get cash payments directly from Germany. And I can tell you that our case management load has not gone down at all. There are things that they need from us, and it does not take away the case management necessary. The other issue, just a quick story, we were in a meeting with somebody from the claims conference on an audit, and they were shocked to know that more of our time as case managers are spent case managing than actually seeing the survivors, just because of the load of work that we need to do. I just wanted to put in my two cents there.
Can I say something real quick as well? This is Carly from Philly.
Yes, Carly, go ahead.
Yeah, so I just wanted to echo, who was just speaking right there?
Erica.
Erica from Hartford.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to echo what you were saying, Erica, because Philly is also a cash for services pilot site. And we have two cohorts, you know, so we have about 85 clients in the cash for services pilot program. And exactly as you just said, it did not decrease our care management needs whatsoever, just because the clients are not, you know, receiving home care services through us in terms of us paying for them. We're still doing all of those other care management pieces, you know, getting nurse practitioner in there, Meals on Wheels, everything that's not home care still requires our care management power. So it has not lessened the necessity for that at all. So I'm glad you said that, because we're experiencing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, guys, this is Laura in Kansas City. We could get a list of the programs doing cash for services, because I know Detroit is also doing it. We could get a list of people doing cash for services and have one of our future calls kind of be an assessment of what's going well and maybe what isn't going well. And then we could strategically, like Jenny said, really strategically report out on kind of where we need extra support to the claims conference, but in a strategic way that doesn't feel kvetchy.
Well, we can. I think there's only five either in the country or internationally. There's very few.
So we know three of them: Philly, Hartford, and Detroit.
Anyone else on this call that is doing that?
We have one client who moved from Philly to that we're doing that with, and we see the same Jewish Family Service headed down in San Diego.
Well, if anyone's interested, if we are going to do some sort of concerted committee or talking with them, I guess someone
I'd love to put
in the chat box that they'd be interested in being, you know, one of the representatives, and then we can sort of go from there. I think Laura Victoria would be leading that.
Now, this is Erica again. I really wanted to stress my surprise when, and I don't know if other people have this same experience, that when we were audited, it really wasn't an audit, it was something additional, that the individual at our contact at the claims conference was literally surprised that we spend more time managing, not seeing the clients. Does everybody have that same experience? Because I know Hartford and New Haven certainly does.
Yeah.
Victoria's, LA is nodding their head. What's that like, Victoria? You're muted.
We've had a couple of visits from Claims Conference, and we've really tried explaining to them that it's not only our face-to-face, but on the back end, there is just so much involved in terms of even just coordinating home care and transportation and meals, et cetera, that it takes such an enormous amount of time that the pay is not really the same as what Claims Conference gives us. Our response was like, well, you know, other agencies in Europe like have a caseload of 170 people. So what do you want us to do sort of situation?
What happens in Winnipeg? Is any of this, Adina, can you hear me? Adina, can you hear us?
I can, we're unmuting. Well, one of the things that strikes us, we do, case management does take a lot of work, but our case management is directly related to home care, which we contract with a company in the city. So our agency doesn't own a home care program directly. And all the other things that people talk about, arranging meals on wheels, transportation, generally isn't part of our Holocaust home care program. It's part of our work as social workers working with survivors. So we work a little bit differently here, and we certainly don't do the cash thing. What you said, there's only five in North America. So, but certainly I think we can confirm that a lot of work does go into the case management piece of things, whether it's doing the diagnostic assessment and following up around home care issues. That's certainly there, but maybe not to the same degree as some of the other ones.
So what's your program?
I would just like to add what Adina said, is that I think the way that Claims Conference sees it, and the way Germany frankly sees it, is that this is a home care program. It's not a case management program. It's not a ongoing meal program. It's a home care program, and everything else is just extra. Like, that's kind of the premise of this.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we're saying too.
Yeah.
So I guess we're saying, Victoria, the same thing, that we certainly do all those other functions for our survivors, but it's not under sort of our mandate under the Holocaust home care specifically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I think that's what we're saying, yeah.
Something else?
Sure. So you're in that case, your workers are spending a lot of time on case management specifically related to home care, or these other kinds of adjunct work that other people are talking about?
Adjunct work and home care. It depends on caseloads, depends on case workers. So it's a mix of everything.
Yeah.
Someone had asked Cindy what your total caseload is and how many case management managers do you have?
So we have 250 survivors. We about 160 something get home care. Maybe another 20 or so just get emergency assistance. We help with restitution. Our case management is not just around home care. It's around, like other people said, it's around helping them get places. Florida is not exactly a hotbed of
public
transportation. It's arranging lift rides and monitoring those rides to make sure they get picked up and get dropped off. And, it's a whole host of things. It's meeting with groups of people. It's It's doing some, you know, a little bit of clinical social work with a couple of them that really need it. You know, just a variety of activities. I have 3 full-time case managers. One of those focuses on some case management and really oversees allocating out our home care hours. We work with 14 home care agencies, so we have to manage that process. We don't let the clients just say, I need so many hours. Obviously, we have to manage that. And then I have a couple part-time people. I have one person that speaks Russian that helps everybody out, and she's retiring. And so, and we need more Russian support. And so I've asked, one of the things I asked for was hire somebody more hours with the Russian speaking clients, mm-hmm. which is about half of our clients.
So, wow. You need someone speak Russian.
Yeah, and one of my case managers isn't even in my budget. So my case management budget's like around $169,000. And that's not, and then I have another 40 something under other personnel, which is really my time, the program director's time. Right. Yeah.
Wow.
Can I jump in again?
It's Adina in Winnipeg.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Hi, it's Adina in Winnipeg. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So we were just talking here, there's a few of us here, about case management, and we're noticing the whole conversation here is about the home care piece. So we receive money also from Germany for financial assistance, and we spend a fair amount of our work doing case management in that program when there may be requests for medical aids or Meals on Wheels, people are talking about transportation. So our case management is not just within the Holocaust Home Care, but we also have hours related to work we do in terms of financial assistance for survivors, many of whom are Russian survivors that we mentioned. So that's a piece of it. I don't know if it plays out in other agencies the same way.
A lot of time just helping them with life, you know. Now, and down in Florida, a lot of their, you know, they don't, their families aren't here, so we spend, you know, basically we do a lot of the stuff to help them manage
right
day-to-day things. And you know, I basically, and as I said, out of that budget, one of my case managers is not even paid for by us. It's paid for by another JFS, because we cover, that's the other thing, we cover 6 counties.
Wow.
It's about 5,000 square miles. It's a lot of driving around and phone work and that kind of stuff.
So what about people we haven't heard from? Lisa Cronenberg, or I don't know, I'm looking here to see who hasn't talked to us. Kim?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
The phone, your audio isn't set up well. I'm from JFNCS Toronto. Toronto's a bit of an odd duck in the sense that we have 2 agencies that provide service. One, Circle of Care, that provides home care and has the home care grant. JFNCS Toronto has the EAP, a small case management, restitution, and Cafe Europa. And much like Adina in Winnipeg, we provide a ton of poverty reduction, poverty support. Right now on my EAP caseload, I have over 800 survivors, mostly FSU, all living below the poverty line. We can fluctuate anywhere between 8 and 1,000 a year. And huge demand for linguistic skill, huge demand for resource needs. Many of our survivors are new immigrants or immigrants with minimal family. Or have recently achieved some sort of status in Canada and may have absolutely no government benefits. We get minimally funded for case management, and we have seen no increase in case management, I'm going to say, for 8 to 10 years.
Wow. Okay. Doesn't sound like you have any problems or concerns. You're managing it?
No. We're not. We're in constant dialogue with Claims Conference. Our caseloads are really unmanageable. Most of our staff have a caseload of about 250 survivors per, which is just not helpful or useful
250 per case manager?
Per case manager.
Oh my goodness.
My case management budget does not cover really even two of our workers. And in addition, we have a full-time worker that we've managed to get some budget from, clearly outside of case management, to do restitution. There's a lot of demand in Toronto for restitution. There is no question that we are on the, it has been a challenge to administer this part of the program ongoingly, particularly in the last couple of years as our EAP program grows exponentially. We would find that we are growing 15 to 20% in terms of new clientele accessing the program with really, really complex needs. So I'm more than happy to fetch.
Wow.
Lisa, I'm just curious, with 250 clients on a caseload, what type of work are the social workers doing?
Minimal. Which is not something we're proud of. We have this, there are no other programs at the agency that have this type of setup. The workers will see the clients initially. In the end of the day, the clients have to call us each year to initiate the emergency assistance piece, and it's through our emergency assistance program that we that we are able to provide case management. We do the initial EAP assessment on every 12 months. A full case management time, case management interaction happens during then workers are assessing needs. They're able to do referrals and onward, and they're looking for crisis management and certainly looking for complex cases that we can refer elsewhere in the agency so that they get more support. But in terms of ongoing work, it is clearly giving capacity very minimal and not at all acceptable to us in terms of standard.
Yeah, that must
be so frustrating. I can imagine just the level of overwhelmness that the social workers are experiencing.
Absolutely.
Okay, I feel better.
Is that Cindy?
Yeah.
What about Kim in Portland? What's happening with you all there? Does any of this relate to you? I just unmuted you.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me. Okay. This is my first time joining the affinity group here, so hello to everyone. I had a question about whether anyone else provides their home care services in-house, so basically with care providers that your agency hires. It sounds like most of you outsource your home care, and I was wondering if anybody else provides it in-house. We have a mostly Russian-speaking clients from the former Soviet Union, and we found that if we try to outsource it, most of the agencies in Portland don't have enough Russian-speaking caregivers, which is one of the reasons that we provide our care in-house. And I wonder if anyone else is having similar issues with that, or if anyone else even provides it in-house.
This is Gail in Cherry Hill, and we do have a small home care program, and we happen, fortunately, to have a driver companion. She's not a certified home health aide, but a driver companion who is Russian speaking, and mm-hmm. she is in demand with the former Soviet Union survivors. However, we do extend, we work with a number of home care agencies, and we find that here in New Jersey that many of the FSU are already connected to a home care agency because they have some Medicaid hours, home attendant hours. So when we're able to offer them additional hours, you know, if they're eligible for it, then we're able to use the current agency. Fortunately, does have Russian speakers. There are some agencies that do have Russian speakers, but it is an issue as we also have the JFNA grants that we have to now provide workshops for the former Soviet Union survivors. We need somebody who can speak Russian, a case manager, somebody, because we're going to have trouble. Some of them speak very well and understand very well, but typically the people who were on Medicaid came to the country when a Medicaid didn't work. They really are not as assimilated, you know, as the others who came and worked. So language is more of a barrier. But we find that when our Russian caregiver, a companion is out or she's taking time off, they refuse to use anybody else because they just want the Russian. So it does come into some challenges because we're trying to use the hours and provide them with the hours, and it has to be a Russian speaker.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Kim, I would add to that, one of the things we've noticed in Los Angeles is that clients' family or friend are willing to be the caregivers. And then what we end up doing is we end up signing them up through JFS. We have a home care agency that's kind of together but separate sort of situation. And what ends up happening is that that caregiver is not only caring for the relative or a friend, and then they express like, oh, I want additional work. And then we end up using the same caregivers for other clients as well.
Okay, so are they actually employed by your agency?
So we have, JFS LA has a JFS home care agency, but it's kind of separated, but kind of together. I don't even know how to, like, it's a little complex. But it's essentially a contracted agency with us. But we end up sending caregivers there because that's who the client wants to work with, because they're already familiar with them, or they're their IHSS provider or a former provider. And then they end up working not only with that client, but with others because they express interest in them.
Okay. But it's, so they you kind of contract with them rather than having them be like a staff person of your agency.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, interesting.
So Elena from Minneapolis, or Abigail, or Nadia, anything that you want to add to this? Toby?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. This is Elena. We have better experience if we provide in-home services for our Russian-speaking survivors through private pay caregivers. So if our survivors are able to find their own private pay Russian-speaking caregiver, we are doing reimbursement using a timesheet which claims conference provided. When we try to match them with agencies, in many times it doesn't work because it is inconsistent, the quality of the work is not at their expectations. So private pay caregivers is the better way for us.
Wow.
Elena, it's Jenny in Florida. Do you do the background checks on those private caregivers?
The thing is that we don't hire these people, and we don't have many. We have just a couple who is working with some of our survivors. Survivor is hiring, or their family is hiring. So it is like their own private pay care provider, and we are doing reimbursement. So they don't need to pay themselves out of pocket. We pay through claims conference money. And claims conference accepts that if we provide a timesheet, which is a form of claims conference.
We used to do that in San Diego. However, the California rules were such that we had to change it and start using which worked wonderfully the way you were talking about it. But we had to use agencies. And what we have done is gotten those people to be working for a particular agency. It's been a challenge because they get paid less that way, but it's the only way we're allowed to do it for the state of California because of all the and it's a lot of liability on us as an agency if something would happen. So the rules were changed, and as I said, we have them working through an agency, but they can find their own caregiver, and that works as well as possible. Not as well as it did before, but it certainly works.
I understand that, and I know that when we talk to claims conference, they allow if a client has a long-standing relationship with a provider, they can continue to use them when they are eligible for claims conference money. So in that case, the client found the provider at some point, and it works well for the client. And then when we were able to start paying for this service, that benefits the client. So it is not that we hire somebody without a background check for the client.
Okay. Does anyone else want to talk about this before we end? I know we have 4 minutes left. I did just want to mention that resource library that I know Laura talked about a few times. I've written it in a lot of our emails. It's very easy to get into it. You just have to go to the members only portion of our webpage, and then you sign in with a password and username, and everyone has received that. And then you just go to the affinity group, you search by affinity group, and then you go to the pull down menu and you find Holocaust Survivor Services Professionals. And then everything that you guys send to me about anything will be uploaded. So you'll be able to see. And over time, we're going to get folders that will make it a little more organized. But at this moment in time, the website wasn't able to do it, our website provider. So we're figuring out how we're going to make it work. But send the stuff so Rebecca can find what she needs. And, you know, we can put up forms and other kinds of things that you all are interested in. The map, I think Laura mentioned. So that would be good. Did anyone else want to say anything? I don't even know who the 718 number is. Who is this? Who's at 718? Anyway, so it's always good if you guys let us know who you are so that we know who's speaking. I always want that as well. But this was a great conversation, I think. Did everyone have an opportunity to talk that wanted to? Abigail? Nadia? Okay. Well, do you have any last words? Laura, Victoria?
One of the asks was for us to gather information on how many survivors each community is serving so that we can sort of pair people up with like agencies. So that's something we can think about in the new year. But I just wanted everyone to know we are reading those little, our group chat.
Well, maybe we can have some sort of Google document that people can add to it, you know, if that's something we want to do. I'll talk with you guys about that, you know, in the new year. I'm just taking a picture of the notes. Anything, Victoria, you want to add?
I would just really encourage everybody to think about the things they want to bring up in this group. And you can email Lisa, you can email us, and then, you know, we can bring it to the forefront and we can try to address it, because I think there's been so much rich conversation going on today, and I'm so happy that this is happening.
Terrific. Okay. That's good.
Hey, Lisa and Laura, can you get, this is Cindy, can we have a quick 5-minute conversation after this is over? I'm not in the office. I wanted to talk to you about the conference.
Okay, so me and Laura Gilman?
Yes.
Okay, terrific. So we'll stay on with you. So otherwise, I guess everyone, thank you so much for coming. And we'll look forward to seeing you our next time, which is going to be on February 13th. Fill out those evaluations. Let us know what you're interested in, and we will do our best to make sure that your needs are met. We're going to, whatever, we got a lot of people who are interested in transportation. We'll pull that together, and we'll pull together a little committee to talk with Claims Conference. So we're listening to what you're saying. So your voice is important to us. So with that being said, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Bye, everyone. Lauren, Cindy. Do you want Victoria to stay on too?
Dear Charles.
Are you going to be at the conference, Victoria?
I don't think so.
Are you going to be there, Laura?
I think that, well, this is about our proposal, and Laura was in our proposal. So
Cindy and I are going to be presenting. Victoria, everyone should be at the conference. It's going to be so fun.
Yeah. Said that. And then the JFNA is having a conference afterwards. Okay, we'll put it in the next time.
I'll talk to my boss about it.
Terrific.
Okay.
We're going to have an affinity group chair. We're going to have an affinity group chair.
Just build a claims conference, Victoria. Just build a claims conference. It's fine.
Because they're having
with the money they freeze, right?
Right. We'll just bill them.
I know. Okay, ladies, thank you.
Bye, Victoria.
Bye. Bye. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so you can talk, Cindy. I don't know where I guess I can remove people who aren't here. Goodbye, you guys. Okay.
I'm the 727 number, so.
Okay, so I don't want to remove you.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, so we had our Holocaust, one of our luncheons today, so I was like, okay. I was like, I'm going home. I'm just going to take this from home.
Okay.
So anyway, you accepted our proposal for the trauma-informed care.
Yeah.
And we're presenting with JFNA and Laura, and I submitted it, but on our behalf, on the three of our behalf.
You did a great job. So,
oh, thank you, Laura. Yeah. And you came back and asked if we would consider combining with the JEVS from Philly.
Yes.
Okay. So I have not heard from them, and I have not. Did you? I'm assuming you asked them the same thing.
Yes.
Okay. So
I haven't heard from them either.
Okay. And I haven't had a we haven't had a chance to talk. I mean, I'm sure we can figure out how to. So the time is 75 minutes, right?
Yeah.
The session.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure we'll be able to figure it out.
Right.
So I'm sorry.
Cindy, they're doing something similar. Like the committee felt that you two could do something because you're both doing trauma-informed care. You're doing trainings. I don't remember exactly right now what both of you are doing, but it was something that we felt you could present in the same workshop that people who are interested in that would attend.
Yeah, and it was around becoming a trauma-informed agency. So, you know, taking some of the things that we've done through our smaller grants and applying it at the broader agency level. I think I've looked through their proposal. I didn't read it that much in depth. I mean, these proposals are pretty high level. And I don't know, Laura, I don't